Let me let you in on a little conversation that was had recently among two of our monks. So I got to hear about this and I thought I should share it with you. Because stories like this I've read in the books. The Tripitaka has several of these stories, quite a few in fact. But these stories, it really inspires me. So I'll cut to the chase and I'll give you the story. You can make what you make of it. So recently, two of our monks had been discussing with each other when they had met for a teacher's meeting. Now, you'll all be familiar with what a teacher's meeting is, most of you. So at our monastery, everyone has a teacher, a dedicated teacher. And at least once a week, we meet with our teacher to discuss our progress, our practice, the do's and the don'ts, what we should be doing, what we could be doing better, how we can improve and work on ourselves and so on. So this happens at least once a week. So at a recent meeting between teacher and student, a conversation had been had, and then later, another monk who had overheard this conversation had found an opportunity to speak to the student monk. So here's how the conversation went. So this monk who'd observed that conversation, so he passed by doing some work where the meeting was being held, and he'd said, "Sanna, sir, I couldn't help but overhear the conversation you were having with your teacher the other day. And I admit I can't say that this is the first time I've had the privilege to listen in on that conversation, because it just happens to be that when you have these conversations, I'm outside doing some other work, because they have it in the kuti. So this other monk is outside, he's doing some work. And so on several occasions I've made this observation, would you mind if I share it with you?" So who's saying this? The monk who had been observing this. He's sharing this with the student monk. So the student monk says, "Of course, please. What is it that you have observed?" To which this monk says, "I couldn't help but notice that whenever you have these teacher-student meetings, it is you who does most of the talking. Your teacher is fairly quiet. You do most of the talking. And I just wondered whether that was the most appropriate way to conduct your teacher-student meeting. I just felt that perhaps you should let your teacher do some of the speaking as well." So this is being said to the student. Now, of course, you know, upon hearing this, the student monk, he gets very bothered by it, and he begins to wonder, "Oh dear, perhaps it is so, and I have made a mistake. Maybe I should have let my teacher speak instead of me just blabbering on." So he'd made a note of this, and he thought to himself, right, the next time I go and meet my teacher, I'm going to go and apologize to my teacher, and I'm going to make this confession that I'd been too talkative during my teacher meetings, so please forgive me, and from here on, I shall keep quiet and you do the speaking. So this is what he had determined for himself. So along comes the following week. The student goes and meets the teacher. So the student has a confession to make now, doesn't he? So in a very apologetic tone, he says, "Venerable sir, teacher, I have an apology to make. See, over the past few weeks, I hadn't realized I was making this mistake, but I was so fortunate that one of my fellow monks had been listening in just in passing. He'd overheard a conversation that we've been having, and he thought he should share that observation with me, which he did, for which I'm eternally grateful, and it seems that I've been making a grave mistake." So the teacher asks, what is this mistake that you speak of? Because I never felt that a mistake was being made, and what was the mistake? So I said, it's about the way we conduct our teacher meetings. Okay, carry on, says the teacher. Well, it seems that I've been the one who's been doing most of the talking, whereas in fact, if this is my teacher meeting, and I have come to meet my teacher, I should let my teacher do the speaking, whereas I should be doing the what? The listening. So this is what the student had said. So the teacher takes a moment to understand exactly what was being said, and then the teacher says, well, so these past weeks, I admit, you've been coming here religiously every week, and that's well done of you. And whenever we have these meetings, yes, you do a lot of the talking. What are these meetings? Asks the teacher. So the student says, these are my teacher meetings. So he asks, the teacher now asks the student, what do you think this meeting is for me? Who's asking this question now? The teacher's asking, what do you think these meetings are for me? And then again the student says, well, I don't know, we call this a teacher meeting. So in Sinhalese we refer to it as a Guru Hamu, as you'll be familiar with it. And so the teacher says, exactly. This is our teacher meeting. All these past weeks, as you have been here, sat down in front of me, you've been speaking. I have also been chipping in here and there. As long as what you're saying is the truth, as long as what you speak is the noble path, over the past weeks you've been coming here and you've been sharing with me the problems you've been having in your life, how you've been struggling with your defilements, and how on some occasions you had failed, but in those instances where you had sought refuge in the Dhamma and how the Dhamma had helped you to recover yourself and stand upright. Isn't that what you've been sharing with me? Asked the teacher. The student says, yes, Venerable Sir, that's what I've been sharing with you. Any time and any place where you'd overstepped the mark or said something that is not righteous, that is not true, have I not intervened? Have I not stepped in and said, no, there you got it wrong. In these places, in these instances, you got it right, but that bit is wrong. Have I not stepped in and corrected you where you went wrong? The student says, yes, of course you did. Well then, this is a teacher meeting. At the teacher's meeting, I also come to meet my teacher. As long as what is being discussed is the Dhamma, your teacher is the Dhamma, my teacher is the Dhamma, as long as when we discuss, we are discussing the Dhamma, we are in a teacher's meeting. Why should I step in and interrupt you when in fact you are, as you speak, you bring forward our teacher, our mutual teacher? What a wonderful response that was from a teacher. See, when I got to know about this, I was so utterly impressed by one thing. The Dhamma is making a difference in these people's lives. And there's no doubt about that. Because you see, conventionally, in society, there's always a difference in status, isn't there? Boss and the subordinate. The teacher and the student. The master and the slave. These are statuses that society creates, and then people go in and take those statuses and they assume those statuses and they think that it is I who is the teacher, it is I who is the student. But you see, in that conversation that was had, there was no teacher per se and there was no student per se. What there was the teaching. As long as the teaching prevailed, as long as the Dhamma prevailed, as long as the truth prevailed in that conversation, that conversation was a teacher's meeting, because they had both come to meet the teacher. That is what the teaching had done to the two of them. So the teacher had never interrupted the student, because what was being said was the teaching. So the student was very happy to hear that. And then he'd finally said as he walked away, Venerable Sir, this is why you are my teacher. Amazing, isn't it? So as I said, I remember reading these things in books, stories such as these, when the great elders used to meet with each other, and they used to share with each other the Dhamma that they had learned from the Buddha. Sometimes it was the junior monk who shares what he knows with the senior monk. Sometimes the senior monk shares what he knows with the junior monk. But never do they have any conflict. Never is there any friction between the two of them as to who's the one who has to do the preaching and who's the one who has to do the listening. Because they'd both come together for one purpose and one purpose alone. That is to surface the truth. So what have we come here for today then? A teacher's meeting, right? Well, there you go. So this is a teacher's meeting. You have come here to meet a teacher. What about me? I have also come here to meet a teacher. The teacher. The teaching. So as long as when we get together, the teaching surfaces, that's a mutually beneficial meeting. That's a meeting that is worth had. That is a meeting that is worthwhile. I was very impressed to hear that, and I'm sure you are too. So, let's go meet our teacher then, shall we? Let's bring our palms together then, in veneration of the Supreme Enlightened One, the Perfect One, the Magnificent One. He whose compassion, loving kindness, and wisdom knows no bounds. It is to his name we make this veneration. And as we do so, let us also remind ourselves that we take an oath and we renew our pledge, our allegiance to the Noble Path, our allegiance to the Noble Triple Gem. May the Noble Triple Gem always guide us to the ultimate bliss of Nibbana.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I'm going to ask you a question which might sound a bit like a riddle, but it's not. But you might wonder, what is it that Swami Nuhanze is trying to refer to? Because it might sound like a bunch of words and I'm just trying to play with their meanings. I'm not really. I'm asking you a very specific question. I want to try and get you to come up with the answer to this question, which will help you realize an eternal truth. The question is very simple. Although the question is very simple, in simplicity is its complexity. So, let's give it a go, shall we? Here's a question. What's there? That's it. There's your sermon for today. Thank you all for coming. If you can find the answer to that question, that is the solution to your existence. It is a solution to everything. What is there? What's there? Start thinking about it. You have come to meet your teacher, haven't you? Good. I'm trying to help you meet your teacher. I'm not your teacher. I am not your teacher. I'm trying to help you see and meet your teacher. So I'm doing my part, you've got to be doing your part. If you've come to meet your teacher, then I tell you, try and find an answer to this problem and you will meet your teacher. So once again, the question is, let's put it up on here. What's there? What is there? What's there? Not what's over there. If you think what's over there, you think I'm referring to something over there, not that. It's quite simple. What? What's there? What is there? As in, not what is. That's not what I mean. Like, what's there? There means there, here, you see, that's not what I mean. So it's not that. What's there? See, people used to go and ask this question all the time of the Buddha. Say you had a pumpkin in your hand. Just anything. I don't know where that came from, but pumpkin. Say you had a pumpkin in your hand. So I have a pumpkin in my hand. I ask you, what's there? What's there? Let me take something else. Oh wait, I didn't put the pumpkin to a side first. What's there? Now you're thinking, well, it was pumpkin first, invisible pumpkin, now it's a visible pen. No, that everyone knows. Right? Even a 5-year-old can give you that answer. Use your understanding of the Dhamma to come up with the answer to this question. We have discussed the answer to this before, so you know the answer. I want you to actually know the answer, not just know the answer. I need it to become your comprehension. So this question is to test your comprehension, not your mere understanding, not your mere knowledge of the answer. Do you know what's there? Think. Okay. Energy, Okay. Manifestations. Any other answers? Dhamma. No one's saying pen, I don't know why. Dhamma, Nothing is there, Nothing's above now. Oops. Collection, okay. Image, okay. I like those answers, they're all good answers. Ooh. I've got a problem with you now. Okay, that's also a good answer. There's a problem with the question. Think. I want all of you to think. Keep on thinking. Even those who have suggested an answer, still think. What's there? Perception, okay. Wrong question, again. Outcome of entity thinking. Wow. This is getting very profound now. I didn't come prepared for this. Let me tell you one of the answers that the Buddha gave. To this question. So he's given several answers to this question. And among the answers that you shared with me just a moment ago were those answers. But this is also an answer. And the reason I share with you this particular answer is because it gives you a portal with which to really, really, really understand what's there. The Buddha says, Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. What's the rest of it? Sabbanta nirodha dhammanti. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabbanta nirodha dhammanti. That is the answer to the question, what's there? Now, most of you are very familiar with this phrase, which may be to your disadvantage. Because the moment I say it, you're probably thinking, oh yeah, I understand. This pen has that characteristic of being samudaya and nirodha. That's not what I mean. So, just put that to a side for the time being and try and really understand the meaning of this phrase. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabbanta nirodha dhammanti. what's there, by what's there, I don't need to show you anything. See, right now I have a pen in my hand, I have an object in my hand, and I ask you the question, what's there? And the moment I say that, you think I'm referring to this pen. Because if I ask you this question, like without pointing anything out to you, and just said, what's there? You're now thinking, what? What are you referring to, Swaminathan? Can you tell me what you're referring to, and then I'll answer the question? So I have to show you something in my hand. I have to show you an object. I have to point at something. I have to at least point at someone and say, well, what's there? Because when I ask you what's there, you're waiting for me to point something out in nature so that you can then go on to answer the question, the name it's given, its characteristics, its shape, its size, its color, and you can use all these characteristics to describe it. Describe what? What's there? Yeah? So you think we are talking about an object. We are talking about some form of entity. That's not what the Buddha means when he says, Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabbadhanda imata dhammati. This is the epiphany that he had on the point, at the point of becoming a Buddha. In the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he utters this. Anya Kondanya, the first individual to attain a noble fruit in the Buddha Sasana. He attains this noble state of Sotapanna, stream enterer, upon understanding this. Understanding what? The answer to what's that? Now, I need you to tune yourself with what I'm trying to explain to you here. Best thing you can do is just put aside what you already know. I can't say this for all of you, but some will already have an impression of or an assumption as to what I mean here. And, you know, one of the greatest obstacles, well, the biggest obstacle to greatness is goodness, you know that. One of the greatest obstacles to wisdom is the knowledge that you already have. Put your hand up if you disagree. Oh, there you go. The knowledge that you already have is the greatest obstacle to aspiring to a greater wisdom. Because the reason for that is, your knowledge will always be a filter to whatever words are being said by a teacher to help you to go from what you understand now to what you need to be understanding next. So I ask you, just for the time being, put aside what you already know. So I ask you the question once again. What is there? The moment I ask you this question, ladies and gentlemen, your natural inclination would be to start thinking about things in this room, for instance. You'll think about things you're familiar with. And now, almost all of us, you know, we do these discussions, Nyaya discussions and so on. Yeah, we discuss the doctrine and we speak to our teachers and we speak to our fellow Upasis and Sravikas and so on. And we try and understand the Dhamma. And in those instances, you take objects that are around you, yeah, your water bottle, your book, your pen and so on, and you start describing and defining and explaining the characteristic, their characteristic nature. You start talking about them. So then in those instances, you pick something up in your hand and you say, well, in my hand I have something and let me explain to you what that is. So then you start talking about it. And you use the Dhamma to try and explain something that you have already defined as an entity. It's kind of like you bringing up a falsehood and then you use the truth to try and explain the falsehood. There's a problem with that. It's like saying, this is an elephant. Now, you understand everything that you know about an elephant. Or you make reference to everything you know about an elephant and try and explain and try and prove that this is not an elephant. Whereas when you began this conversation, you're already working on the assumption that this is either not or is an elephant. Is this an elephant? Is this not an elephant? is this an elephant or is this not an elephant? Okay, what about the rice you had this morning? Is that a human being or is that not a human being? It was on its way to becoming a human being. But did you eat humans this morning then? No. You can't explain the world in that way. Because the moment you start taking entities and start talking about, you start using the Dhamma to describe entities, you have failed. Let me say that again. If you take an entity, if you make an entity the object of your conversation, and then you try and use the Dhamma to explain the entity, to describe the entity, to detail the entity, you have failed. Because the Dhamma is not here to help you explain something that does not exist. The Dhamma is here to explain something that does exist. What exists is nature. Now here's the thing. The moment I say nature, you already start thinking about nature. That's not what I mean. Your knowledge is the greatest obstacle to your wisdom. Because you and I, we all know what nature is. That was one of the first lessons we learned at school, wasn't it? Mother Nature. Everything around us is nature. The air we breathe, that's nature. I'm not referring to that nature. I'm referring to nature. I'm referring to a characteristic. I'm referring to the way it is. I'm referring to a phenomenon. When I say nature, now in the English language there are mainly two meanings to this word nature, right? So let's try and distinguish which one I'm specifically referring to here. There is nature that we call Mother Nature. Then there is the nature of something. You know that as well, don't you? The nature of something. What is the nature of? And you ask. You make reference to something. What is the nature of that? So there are two definitions to this word. Nature. I'm going to put them up on the board. So there is nature. And there is nature. When I speak of nature, this is Mother Nature. So it is a noun. If you like. Nature. Nature is a noun. Okay? So it's like, don't destroy the nature. That's the nature. Then this is nature. This is, I'm going to call it, shall we call it an adjective? Nature. Something that describes. It's a characteristic. I'll call it a characteristic. Characteristic. Okay? So here's the problem that we have. When you ask the Buddha, what's there? You tend to ask this question with the assumption in your mind that this is what is there. And now you want the Buddha, the Dhamma, in fact the truth. You're trying to seek a truth that explains this. So here includes, what's included here? What is encompassed in nature? Trees, birds, bees, the sun, the stars, right? Everything you see, everything here, all things you see around here. So much so that when you see something that is a product of nature, you say that's natural. That's what nature, it's a derivative of nature, isn't it? Something that is a product of nature is natural. That which is man-made, we call either artificial or unnatural. That is, what that means is, it is not a product of nature. So when you ask this question, what is there? You're looking for an answer to, you point at something in nature. You actually point at something in nature and ask the question, what is there? Now you're looking for an answer that describes this. The truth is, this is only a picture in your mind. The Buddha gives you the answer. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabbanta nirodha dhammanti. That is this nature. The nature, if you like, of nature. But once again, you say that is the nature of nature. Again you're thinking, well then there is this nature, and this nature describes this nature. No. No, no. Come out of that thinking is what I'm asking you to do now. I'm asking you to step outside of entity-based thinking. This is a very subtle point. You know, perhaps the first day we started to do these sermons, I might have even then referred to Yankinchi Samudaya Dhammang Sabbanta Nirodha Dhammanti. In fact, the very first sermon that was ever given in the Buddha Sasana had that. What we do, now, unlike the Buddha, who upon reaching Buddhahood, his understanding is perfect. Like he doesn't practice the path from becoming a Buddha and then he starts making sense of what else these things mean. But whereas for us, as we continue with our practice, subtler and subtler meanings of these things begin to surface. That's what we do. It's like when you look at an object and you want to see it in see its miniature detail, you put it under a microscope. But if that microscope is not good enough, you want to see something, things even smaller than that, you're still looking at the same object. What do? You change the lens. Now you can rotate the device and you change it so you get a more powerful lens. And if that's also not enough, you can even put it under an electron microscope. Is that the furthest you can go? No. How far can you go? Limitless, absolutely. But technology will always have its limitations. But if you can go beyond the limits of technology, you can go as far as you want. That is limitless, endless. We are talking about Yankinchi Samudaya Dhamma, Sabbanta Nirodha Dhammanti. In your mind, you're probably thinking now, Buddha is talking about Dhamma. He's referring to things, he's referring to entities, he's referring to objects, and what he's actually saying there is, objects and things and entities in this world, they are the product of causes. And when the causes are there, the product, the entity that prevails, and when the causes cease to exist, then that entity ceases to exist. So what you're thinking, the Buddha says, is nature describes nature. I'm telling you that is not what is said there. What he's saying is, it's just nature. What is there is nature. It's a characteristic. A characteristic is what's there. A quality is what's there. A feature is what's there. Not an entity. So we mustn't be using nature to describe nature. Nature is not here to describe nature. Nature's nature. That's it. Shall I speak in Greek? Would it make more sense? I know this is quite subtle, so do try and pay attention and try and understand exactly what I'm trying to get across to you. Because in these words, you will understand anicca. You begin to realize that although all these years, perhaps even, you know, you've been speaking the Dhamma, preaching the Dhamma, practicing the Dhamma, you've been thinking that anicca is a characteristic of an object. Ladies and gentlemen, anicca is not a characteristic of an object. Anicca is the characteristic. That's it. All you have around you are characteristics, not characteristics of objects. Yankinchi Samudaya Dhamma is a characteristic, not of an object. It's a characteristic. Sabbanta Nirodha Dhammanti is what again? It's a characteristic. Of what? No, no, wrong question. Yes. We are talking about characteristics. I'll come to that point in just a moment. We talk about characteristics. No matter what you're referring to. So if you, once again, take this example. You and I, we see a pen in our hand. What the Buddha says is, what is here is the characteristic of anicca. His interest is not in trying to explain to you the pen. Because in understanding that this is a pen, what have you achieved? Nothing. Because if you think of this as a pen, now your what comes after that is how you interact with this pen. See, this is why people suffer. Because you know, once this becomes a pen in your mind, when this breaks, you suffer. When you lose this, you suffer. Because what have you lost? A pen. What is broken? A pen. That is because we think of the world in terms of entities, and even when the Dhamma is available to us, we try and use the Dhamma to explain these entities that we have created. It's a bit like trying to use physics to explain what you see in your dreams. How'd that work? How's that going to work? Say in your dreams you're flying. You're an elephant, you have a trunk, and you've got wings, and you're flying. Now, use F equals MA and try and explain that to me. You're an elephant in your dream. You've got wings, you've got a trunk, and you're flying. You're flying in the skies, you're flying over the grounds, over the vast fields, right? This is what you're seeing in your dreams. Now, use whatever physics you have understood, you've learned at school, and try and explain that phenomenon to me. Would it stand? No. Because what's wrong with that? What's wrong with trying to explain a dream using physics? Exactly. You're trying to use something that exists. Not exists, actually. The truth. You're trying to use a truth to explain a falsehood. The truths are not here to explain a falsehood. The truth is here to explain even more truths. Truths can support and explain truths, not falsehoods. See, what you think of through avidya, the truth cannot explain that. So, the Dhamma cannot explain to you what's going to happen to your mother. Because the mother is a manifestation in your mind, out of ignorance. There is, of course, a manifestation outside, that is just matter and energy, right? And the Dhamma can explain what's going to happen to that, but the Dhamma cannot explain what's going to happen to the mother that lives in your mind, because that is a product of your ignorance. How can you use fact to explain fiction? Now, most of you will have read Harry Potter, right? What physics can you use to explain Harry Potter's wizardry? How can you use physics to explain that? Can you use chemistry to explain that? How his spells used to work? Can you explain that? How he walks through an invisible, what do you call it, was it 9 3/4, yeah? Yes, 9 3/4. What physics in this world can help you explain how he walks through that? There is none. Because you can't use the truth to explain a falsehood. In the same way, don't try to use nature to explain nature. So again, what's there? In your mind, you're already thinking, this is a pen, and now let me use the Dhamma to explain that. No. The Dhamma is simply what you need to bear. What the mind needs to bear is the Dhamma. It is what is there. It is the truth. The Dhamma is the truth. What is the truth? Yam kinchi samudaya dhamma. Yam kinchi samudaya. Samudaya is the truth. Sangudaya is the truth. Nirudaya is the truth. It's not that things arise and pass away. Arising and passing away is the truth. Manifestation is the truth. Udaya Nirodha is the truth. Of what? Wrong question. Once again, it's like using physics to explain Harry Potter and his antics. You can't. How he flies on the broom, how do you use physics to explain that? When he plays Quidditch, how do you explain that? Which lesson in physics can help you understand that? You can't. That's why it's fiction. Fact can never explain fiction. A fiction is to be understood as fiction. So if you have fiction in your mind, if you have something that is based in ignorance, an image of that in your mind, the only way to explain that, ladies and gentlemen, is not to try and explain that. It's actually to understand the truth. Once you have understood the truth, you no longer need explanations for the lie, for the falsehood that you had in your mind. Is this making sense to you all? Your faces aren't telling me that for some reason today. Oh, the truth. Yeah. Because the truth is there to explain what is worldly. Yes, fair enough. Yes. Yeah. So, when you start thinking about the world in terms of entities, now you're trying to, because we understand the world as in terms of entities, right? It's when you see your dreams and you try and wake up and you go and ask someone, you know, I dreamed about this, what does that mean? Sometimes you feel like you want to understand the meanings behind your dreams, right? And there are people who can do that. You know, they use their special powers and they can study your dreams and they can tell you when the mind is in such a state, these are the kind of dreams that you see. So there are some explanations for that. But that's not exactly what I mean. What I mean is, if you ask someone to explain the science behind your dream, in other words, say you threw something up into the air in your dream, but it never fell down. It just floated. And it went into orbit. How do you explain that? You throw something up in the sky and it doesn't fall down. It just keeps going up, going up and up and up and up. How do you explain that? You can't use fact to explain fiction. When you're practicing the Dhamma, now last week we talked about a situation. A situational analysis of the Dhamma. How when you get into a bus or a train or something, you've got a seat that you have reserved. Someone sat there. And how do you use the Dhamma to explain that situation and come out of falling into the trap of anger? See, once again, if you think of that experience, that situation as a fixed entity, because fixed entities don't necessarily have to be fixed objects. Even an experience can be a fixed entity. Like the sunset, for example, you know, that's a fixed object. Love. That can be perceived as a fixed entity, not necessarily an object. It doesn't have to be a physical object. When we talk about entities, it doesn't have to be physical objects. Rights. Human rights. How big are human rights? What does it weigh? Nothing. These are not things that are physical objects. But even them, once you have ignorance in your mind, even those things you can see as entities. Because remember, this is the mind playing these tricks and it's ignorance that's behind all this. Once ignorance steps in, ladies and gentlemen, you can't explain something real out of ignorance. Ignorance is capable of absolutely anything. Because, I mean, that's ignorance for you. What are the limits of ignorance? What is the limit of stupidity? There is none. So what are the limits of ignorance? There is none. What are the limits of your dreams? Tell me. There are limits to things you can do in real life, aren't there? There's only so far you can run. There's only so high you can jump. If I ask you to touch the roof, right? Maybe if you're up on those steps, you can. But if you're down here, there's no one tall enough to jump up and touch the ceiling. But in your dream, can't you do that? So what are the limits of your dreams? There are no limits. Why? Why are there no limits to your dreams? because it is not based, in fact, it is not controlled by nature. The laws and rules of nature don't apply in your dreams because it's a dream. It's a made-up thing. It's a mental concoction. So when you're ignorant, whatever comes to your mind cannot be explained through rhyme, reason, and logic. It cannot be. So therefore, you can't be asking me what are the limitations of my ignorance and what I can do with ignorance. There are no limits to your ignorance. There are no limits to what you can do out of ignorance. Anything and everything is possible. Therefore, it is not just physical objects that you can transform into entities. Singing, is that an object? It's not an object. It's a doing thing. Your mind can make that an entity, even though singing is a process. Raining is a process. Even processes, your mind, an ignorant mind, can actually frame it and put it up on the wall. Have you seen pictures of sunsets? You have, haven't you? Pictures of a sunset put on a wall. But that's not a sunset. Because if it is a sunset, the sun has to be doing what? Setting. Is it setting in the picture? No, it's still. It's a sun still. That's not a sunset. So how do you get a picture and frame a sunset? How do you do that? You can't. Because the word itself describes what the sun should be doing, shouldn't it? What should it be? What should it be doing? Setting. Is this a sunset in your picture? No. So it's not a picture of a sunset. But the caption beneath it will say what? Sunset. It's not. But mentally, when you think of the word sunset, doesn't a sunset come into your mind? A beautiful sunset. See, ignorance can frame even processes. Ignorance can frame anything. Because what is ignorance after all? The view that things are entities. If there's a view that things are entities, is it just objects that are entities? No. See, take your body for instance. I'm trying to use analogies here to help you understand this, okay? No matter what we put in through your mouths, your bodies do the same thing with that. It digests. So if you put a carrot, if you put a beetroot, if you put fish, if you put chicken, if you put rice, no matter what we put, no matter what we feed you, your body will do the exact same thing with it, which is breaking it down so that it can reconstruct them to form the device, the parts and the pieces that your body needs for its functioning. Yeah? Because that is what the digestion system does. If it's digestible, it will digest. If it's not digestible, it'll push it out the other end. So just like it doesn't matter what is fed, the body will, at the moment it receives, it will start going to take an action on it, to do what it always does, to do what it knows to do. In the same way, where there is ignorance, it doesn't matter what you feed the mind. Ignorance will always try to do with the mind what ignorance is all about, which is to try and perceive entities. Therefore, this entitification, I'm inventing words here now. If it's not in the dictionary, I apologize. As long as you understand, I don't care what we call it. This entitification of things, they don't have to be physical things. That's why I said, now there are people, you know of course that it is out of jati you get things like fear, anger, grief, right? The 11 great fires are all based in jati. Yeah? Now, we had World Women's Day very recently, didn't we? Yesterday? Thank you. There was World Women's Day yesterday. Now, around the world, there'll be a lot of people talking about women's rights, equal rights for women, and so on. What is the size of women's rights? Square? Endless. Thank you, madam. I'm glad you said that and not me. Thank you, madam. What is the size of women's rights? Is it square, shape, circular, 2 kilos, 20, 3 tons? How big are they? No, but don't people fight for them? And actually, when they are not fulfilled, don't people feel hurt Don't people feel anger, resentment, and they fight for justice, right? So don't you think if all of those emotions are based in jati, don't you think that the mind out of ignorance has been able to entitify women's rights? That's not an object, is it? It's not a rupa. It's not a sabda. In other words, it's not a sight or a sound, but it is a dhamma. Because there are six objects that the mind can perceive. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and dhamma. Dhamma is ultimately what the mind can bear. So they don't have to be physical things. Even the dhamma, the mind can entitify. In other words, put into a frame and consider it as an entity, as a unit. So where it's possible to do it even with concepts. These are concepts. Women's rights is a concept. Blacks and whites, equal rights, again concepts. What about LGBT? Concepts. These are all concepts. And there are people who will fight nail and tooth for it. Sometimes even when they are not people who are affected by it, they'll still fight for it. So my argument is not for or against them. What I'm saying is, the mind out of ignorance is capable of entitifying absolutely anything that the mind can perceive. It's like your bodies. If it is ingestible, most of it is digestible. Whatever you eat, your body can digest. Yes, there are a few things your body cannot digest, but let's just say there's a perfect digestion system. No matter what you put in, it gets digested. Right? In the same way, if the mind can take it, the mind can digest it. In other words, the mind can work on it, and when there's ignorance, it can entitify that. This is why when you start thinking about the world, and I ask you the question, what is this? The first thing that happens in a mind that still has ignorance in it. So, if you're an arahant, this doesn't happen to you, what I'm just about to explain. What I'm just trying to talk about. This won't happen for you if you're an arahant. So let's find out if there are any arahants in the room. When I ask you, what is this? If you're an arahant, you will not perceive a pen and then try to figure what are the causes that give rise to the pen. I'll say that again. If you're an arahant, meaning a mind that is free, completely rid of ignorance, you will not perceive a pen and then try to explain the nature of a pen. And think, dhamma, yankincha samudaya dhamma. Dhamma, sabbanta nirodha dhamma. No. If you're an arahant, that won't happen for you. But for almost every one of us, I have to leave some arahants, right? For almost every one of us, here's what we think. Okay, pen. No, can't think of it as a pen. It's not a pen. It's a manifestation. That's what happened. That is what's happened to you right now. So you see an object of nature and then you try to describe its nature. Isn't that so? You see an object of nature, which is the pen, and then you try to explain that object by using its characteristics. Now you start talking about anicca and dukkha and anatta, and you become philosophers. But this is the stone. Now you are the philosopher's stone. But what I'm trying to get across to you, ladies and gentlemen, is this is not the stone for you philosophers to try and explain. What you need to understand is there is just the philosophy, not the stone. What is there are characteristics. There's a characteristic of energy coming together. That is a characteristic. Once energy comes together, there's a characteristic that keeps that energy in a certain configuration. That the other day we referred to as dukkha. Remember, we spoke about two kinds of dukkha. There is a dukkha that happens in your mind, and there's the dukkha that happens that is to do with affinity, how things are held together. And they don't help us to perceive the world in reality. So there is that. And then there is anatta. Now, anicca, dukkha and anatta, this is the philosophy. Anicca, dukkha and anatta is not here to explain to you natural things. I don't know how successful I am at I'm trying to explain this to you. Some of your faces tell me that I'm absolutely failing here, absolutely. But I'll keep trying. That's my task, to keep trying. Your task is also to keep trying. Let's keep trying. We are here to meet our teacher. Yeah. We try to use nature that the Buddha explained to us, anicca, dukkha and anatta, to explain nature. That's what we try and do. The reason for that is, this is what we see first. This is what we've always seen. Even before you heard the Dhamma, this was always there in your life, wasn't it? Yeah, these are the natural things in this universe. We learned at school about these things. We learned for astronomy about these things. We learned for geography about these things. We learned for biology about these things. Yeah, chemistry and physics helped us to understand these things. What the Buddha comes and says, you see, this is why the Buddha's Dhamma is unlike anything else. It's not like physics. It's not like chemistry. And it's not like biology. It's not another science in the way that you understand science. Because, you know, here's how you use science. You use biology, physics and chemistry to explain these things. The Buddha's Dhamma is not so. Buddha's philosophy says you, this is what is there, not this. So the Buddha's Dhamma does not go to explain these things. I mean, it can, but not in the way that we perceive these things. What the Buddha's Dhamma does is it helps us understand that nature is what is there. Anicca is what is there. Causality is what is there. What is there? So what is there? Anicca is there. Anicca of what? Once again, you're trying to use nature to explain nature. Because this is what we're so used to doing. Yes, of course, all of this is there. Right? So here's a subtlety. I'm not trying to argue the case that nothing exists and we are using Buddhism to explain nothing. Then what's the point of explaining it if nothing exists? We might as well just go home, right? There's no point in discussing nothing. What Buddhism does is it helps us understand that what is there are characteristics. Okay, let's think of this as energy then. What is energy? Why do you call energy energy? Because energy is a characteristic. Now you see, sometimes we use certain characteristics of energy and we give it a special name. We call it electrical energy. We call it kinetic energy. We call it heat energy. We call it light energy. We call it potential energy. We call it mind energy. Energy. These are all names that we give to energy. Because of what? Because of their characteristics. If there's an energy that can make something move, right, we call that kinetic energy. Or energy of motion. Because motion is the characteristic of that energy. So take away motion from energy. Now you take out it kinetic, we take out the word heat, we take out the word light, we take out the word potential, we just have the word energy. Why do you call it energy? What is energy? What is energy? Energy is the ability to do something. That is what energy is. Energy is the ability to do something. The ability to move is called kinetic energy. Ability to do something is called what? Energy. The ability to heat. Heat energy. The ability to light up. Light energy. The ability to store. What? Potential energy. The ability to and something, we always say. So whatever that something is that comes after the ability to, we give it a name. To further define energy, to further categorize energy, but ultimately take out all the things that it's supposed to do, And you are ultimately left with the ability to do is what? Energy. That's what energy is. So, the ability to do, that is energy. That also is a characteristic, is it not? He's very excited. I understand the excitement. I feel the same. Once you begin to start to see the Dhamma in all these different ways, right? It is euphoric. This is like elixir. That's why you got to be careful not to get carried away with it. The Dhamma is like the boat to get you to the other side of the shore, to the other shore, right? Not to carry on your back. Because the Dhamma can be so delightful. It's like nothing else. Because this is the truth. Right? More of the truth is not a falsehood, is it? More of the truth is always the truth. That is why with any other venture in life, with any other endeavor in life, after a while you get fed up of it. You get sick and tired of it. Because more of it is just more of the lies. There comes a point where you get fed up of marriage. Why? More lies, lies keep on adding to lies, and then ultimately you have lies, and then that becomes, you get sick and tired of it. But when there's the truth, it just keeps on explaining the truth, and the truth sets you free, right? So the more you grasp it, the more free that you experience. But we shouldn't get carried away with that. So I understand the excitement. Try and contain that a little bit. So what I'm trying to get across to you here, ladies and gentlemen, is we think of the world in terms of nature. So when you look here, you see these flower arrangements. Then, if you use this flower, and you want to now try and understand the nature of this flower. Because you see, before you walked into the sasana, or as you walked in through the gates of the sasana, you had some problems with your life, didn't you? You were looking for answers. At that point, if I had said, no, the problem is that you think you have problems, you wouldn't have accepted that. Let me say that again. If when you walked into the sasana on that very first day, you came and said to Swami, hello, so many problems. Husband is my problem, wife is my problem, children are big problems, money problems, health problems, that mother-in-law problems, father-in-law problems, debt problems, all sorts of problems, Swami. So what can I do? If I had told you, no, you thinking you have problems is the problem, we would have had to shut down the monastery because no one would have, fed us. No arms giving after that. You'd have just walked back and gone away. Because that is not what you came for. You came in seeking help to address those problems. Now, what do we do in those counseling sessions? If any of you have experience in those, now, some of you were already students when we started those sessions, but later on, many devotees, people from far, across the land, they come and they sit down with our Swaminarayanas, with our Anagarika Mahatmyas, and they discuss their problems. So when they start talking about a problem, you can't simply tell them, no, there is no problem. Because if there's no problem, then you don't need that meeting. No, so you have to say, yes, there is a problem, let's talk about the problem. So then you start to analyze the problem. You start taking it apart. You start slicing it and dicing it and cutting it and start analyzing and reflecting on the problem. Yeah? Eventually, they begin to understand, actually this problem is all in my mind. It's not a real problem. Because vipaka is vipaka is vipaka. That's it. That all there is vipaka. It's my interpretation of vipaka that has caused this problem in my mind. But you can't tell them that right at the beginning. In the same way, when you come in and sit in a sermon, and you want to listen, you come in to listen to the Buddha preaching to you anicca, here's what you try and do. You use anicca to try and explain nature. So I show you this flower, and I ask you, explain anicca to me. Or in other words, I say, explain anicca to me. Here's what you're doing. You're looking for something. Give me something. Aren't you all guilty of that? I'll speak to your teachers if you're lying to me. You like to take your notebook. You'll take your pen. Maybe open it up, right? And pick out all the parts. You'll take your water bottle. you take your ice cap, you take all sorts of things you can grab hold of, and you say, right, so let me begin then. Anicca. This is anicca. As you see, this is formed of various parts. It's not a single unit. See, these are the petals. This is the stem. Anicca. You start to explain. What you're doing is you're using nature to explain nature. What the Buddha said was, put all that to a side. Otherwise, how in the Arupa worlds are you going to understand anicca? Unfortunately, they don't, because they don't get to listen to the Dhamma. But if there was some way to get the Dhamma across to them, which there isn't in the Arupa worlds, you can't do that, because the Dhamma has to come through this or this to help you become a stream enterer. It can't come through this, unfortunately. So in the Arupa worlds, there is no hope of becoming a Sotapanna. But if there was, for instance, oh, let's say someone became a Sotapanna, they died and they were born in the Arupa world. Let's just say that was possible. At that point, there are no rupa to reflect on. But of course, you have the Dhamma. You can reflect on the mind itself. You still have the mind, right? That's always there. The mind is always there, right? But you don't need objects to explain anicca. Because anicca is not the characteristic of an object. Anicca is the characteristic, not of an object. Yes, of course. It's like the counseling sessions. When you come to the counseling session and you say you have a problem, if the first thing I tell you is there is no problem, you walk away. You think I'm crazy. You are regulars now. So I can start talking to you about the more subtle. In fact, you know, I always tell Guru Andhra, these Saturday sermons are very difficult to do. No, they are. They're incredibly difficult to do. Unlike the Sunday sermons at Rajagiri. Because on Saturdays, I have to think of two audiences. There's you lot, who are all taming yourselves under the guidance of a teacher, and you have given up your entire life to the Buddha's asana, as much as you possibly can. Hardly do we get new faces in the audience, but there's a camera staring at me. In the back of my mind, I know that there are people out there on the internet who may come across this as their first sermon. They don't have a teacher. So therefore, they don't have that strict guidance and the love and the affection that comes by being with the Mahasangha, that they don't get. So therefore, there are some concepts they will simply not be able to grasp. If the Sangha was not necessary to attain Nibbana, the Buddha would not have established the Sangha. The Buddha doesn't come along just to have a party and have a gathering, right? The community was established because it is essential to one's practice. Essential. But the Buddha's never done anything too much or too little. Always perfect. So this is why the Saturday sermons are incredibly difficult to do. I have to look at your faces, knowing the things we've discussed before, knowing that you have teachers, there the Swaminarayan is on that side, the Anagarika Mahatmya is on that side. Then we do the Thursday sermons as well, where we go into very deep concepts so that they can help you further your practice as well. And then there's a looming camera looking at me. And then there'll be people behind this camera trying to understand what I have to say. But on Sundays, we don't have that problem. So don't you start coming to Sunday sermons, okay? I said, try swapping seats with me once in a while and see what this feels like. So, yes, Guru Handra did take this pen and ask you to take out the color in this pen. Take this pen apart and try and understand the fact that there is no pen here. Once again, I'm not suggesting that that is not possible. It is. But all I'm asking you to do is, I'm talking about something that is beyond that. A few steps beyond that junction. So, yes, we have to start with this. We have to start with the fact that, you know, say, look at this desk. Can you see a desk? Right, touch the desk for me. That's where we start. I say, then you come and put your hand on one of the legs. I say, no. I said, touch the desk, not the leg. Then you just put your hand on the top. I say, no, touch the desk, not the top. Then you begin to wonder, oh dear, so where do I touch? Which part of the desk is the desk? No matter where you touch, that's not the desk. Yeah, it's a part of the desk. So then you begin to understand, aha, so the desk is not one part. It's not all of the parts. It's what happens when all the parts come together and their contribution manifests the desk. So that is what the Swaminas is trying to explain to me. So the next time you see a desk, you go back home and you see a desk. Once again, you look at the desk and you try and apply anicca to the desk. But that's okay, because that's where we start. But as you make progress, you begin to understand that it is not the desk that we need to be concerned about here. Because what if there were no desks? How do you understand anicca then? Well, thankfully we have chairs. Is that your answer? You've got to be able to understand anicca in a world where there is nothing. Anicca is still there. Because anicca is nature. What I'm trying to say, madam, is what is there is a characteristic, the Trilakshana. What's there are the characteristics. The presence of the characteristics makes all these other things possible. Where we err is when we look at, when our eyes see objects, we think that these are the objects that are present, and then we try and use the fundamentals to try and explain an entity of an object. The reason you call this a pen, why do you call this a pen, in fact? What is so pen about this pen? I'm not going to say penny, because what is so pen about this pen? Why do you call this a pen and not the elephant? Right. You see, it has the characteristic of being able to write. So if being able to do something is energy, being able to write is the energy manifesting as a pen. That is a characteristic. That characteristic is part and parcel of anicca. If there was no anicca, you couldn't explain the ability to do something, the ability of energy coming together to manifest, to represent, to demonstrate a characteristic. The very reason that energy can come together to present this to you is anicca. If not for anicca, what is anicca after all? Characteristic. The characteristic of things coming together. So again, when I say things, once again you're thinking, well, yes, of course, things. Anicca is not talking about things. But I don't have words to get this point across to you without using words that actually refer to entities, right? So I have to say, when things come together to form other things, there in itself I have failed, yes. Because it is not things coming together to form other things. It's just the coming togetherness. That's why yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Samudaya, that's the perfect word for it. Samudaya. Samudaya is coming together. Nirodha, dispersing. Not of things. Yes. Yes. Exactly. So whatever is born, the characteristic of samudaya and nirodha are in whatever you bear. Now, take anicca for example. You see, anicca is anicca whether you understand it or not, right? Let's say no one in this world understands what anicca is. So we haven't had a Buddha say for many, many, many eons. Okay? Now no one understands the word anicca. In fact, anicca as a knowledge does not exist. Yeah? Anicca as a knowledge. Because knowledge, for knowledge to exist, there has to be a mind. So anicca as a drushti, as a view, as a knowledge does not exist. But doesn't the characteristic of anicca exist? Always exists. What about when you talk about pure energy? Shuddha Shakti. That is still subject to anicca. It is still characteristically anicca. So when there's only pure energy, there is none of these things. But there's still anicca, and there are no minds. Let's just imagine all of us were just disintegrated, and ultimately it was just pure energy. So there are no physical objects, no none of these things in the world out there. Yeah, no human beings, no animals, no matter, no other forms of energy. Everything was just back to pure energy. Okay? Still, the nature of anicca is there. Still, once again, you can still say, yang kinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabban tan nirodha dhammanti. So, is there a purpose to samudaya? If you contemplate on the fact, if you contemplate on why energy keeps coming together, and why energy doesn't remain in the state of pure energy, like why if everything was pure energy at one state, why was it that they have all taken these shapes? Like, why have you and I come into being? Right? All of that is ultimately based in ignorance, because whilst there was just pure energy, there was some force. Now, I still don't know how that began. Okay, so don't ask me any questions around that. I don't have a reasonable answer to give you. There was some force that acted on pure energy, and what was needed there was separation. So separation was an expectation on pure energy. So there's a source. Now it's like you go to the ocean with a bucket, yeah, and you dip your bucket in the water, and you take a bucket full of water. Now, although the ocean is the shape of the ocean, the water that you take in your bucket is the shape of the bucket. If you've put a bottle into it, a plastic bottle, now it's the shape of the bottle. Yeah. So in other words, what you've done is you've separated some portion of the vast ocean, which for all intents and purposes, let's just say, has no shape. So the water in the ocean, let's just say it has no shape. Yes, of course, it has the shape of the geography that holds that water. But let's just say there's no shape to that. Now in the bottle, it has the shape of the bottle. In the bucket, it has the shape of the bucket, and so on, right? So if you're asking me, why is the water that was in the ocean, which had no shape, now taking the shape of the bottle? It's because the bottle was dipped into the water to take some of it out of the ocean. That's why it has that shape. In other words, it was separated. When you separate something from something, it's always going to have a shape. It's always going to have a configuration. You take a piece of fabric, you know, they come in those rolls, right? Long rolls of fabric. Now, when you want to sew something, when you make something out of that cloth, what do? You take your scissors and you start cutting it. And sometimes you cut it in a straight line. Sometimes you cut a shape out of it. The shape is determined by what you want out of the source. Yeah, so the shape that you cut along the fabric is determined by the shape that's already in your mind. So there's a particular separation that you want to take out of that which is common, out of which has no shape. So the moment you start doing that, now some kind of shape has come into being. So who shaped that? Or rather, what shaped that? Ignorance shaped that. Because that is what ignorance is, after all. Separate in this way. Separate in that way. Separate in the other way. Now, why are you a female, madam, and why am I a male? Separate in that way. That's why. You're separate in that way. Who wanted that separation? The mind that is ignorant wanted that separation. So what you are today is a representation of what the mind wanted to separate and how it wanted to separate that. The reason that we have all these senses around us, about us, yeah, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our tongue, and our physical bodies, just the mere fact that we have 10 fingers, all of these things. You know, we wanted these 10 fingers because we wanted to identify things in this way. That's why we don't have 12 fingers, we have 10. That's why we don't have 8, we have 10. Because there's a way in which we want to separate things. The 10 unmeritorious deeds are ways in which we want to separate things. Think about it.
So what about the people who have
Yes. That's the way in which they wanted to separate things. You think people with 12 fingers is a deformity? Hmm? What's a deformity? Nature is perfect. There are no deformities. Do you think people who are blind is a deformity? If I had a sixth finger, is that a deformity? No. In nature, there are no deformities. If you are born with a hole in your heart, is that a deformity? Medically, they'll tell you it's a deformity. That is not a deformity. Nature is always perfect. Remember what you order? Yes, exactly. Once you place the order, that's what you get. That's perfect, always perfect. So, but generally speaking, you know, we have this thing called humanness about us. And that's why most have 10 fingers. Most have just one head, one neck, pair of eyes, right? Usually located in the what do you call them, symmetrically. You have 2 ears, again, located symmetrically. One mouth, located symmetrically, right? So this figure that we have, of course, it's supported by your DNA, but DNA, after all, is also what you've ordered. That is the rupa that was created by your energy, by the energy that was generated. But all of this was once pure energy. And all of this will soon be pure energy. I say soon, in the grand scheme of things, it is very soon. Where time is infinite, right? In the space of infinite time, these things are very soon. When will we have the next Buddha? Just like this, very soon. Very soon the next Buddha will come. So don't you worry. What am I referring to? How long your samsara is. Right? In relation to samsara, the Buddha will be here tomorrow. So come, please be ready. So anyhow, I want to make sure that we understand this before we leave today. Still have time. When we start thinking about the world, you're looking for answers to the problems in your life. You know, when you begin to contemplate on a problem, that the problem is in your mind. Yeah. Even when you, like, I'm just talking about general problems. Most of the time, when you have a problem, you realize that the problem is in your mind. Right? That's why a counseling session can help solve the problem. Because we're not changing anything else except for the way you think. If your perspective can help change a problem, then where was the problem after all? In the perspective, right? Yeah. So, whenever we come looking for solutions to problems, we feel that there's a problem out here and we're looking for an answer to solve that problem. The Buddha's purpose is not to help you solve your problems. He just comes and gives you the facts. It is ignorance of these facts that leave you with this problem. So therefore, once the facts have been given, the Buddha no longer needs to solve your problems. Because your ignorance of the facts is the problem. Or is the root of the problem. So therefore, from there on, all the other problems start to branch out. That's why jati, and then all the other problems. What is the cause of jati? Ignorance of what? The fact that it is jati. Yeah? So once the Buddha preaches the Dhamma, you realize that this is jati after all. Once you realize this is jati, then the Buddha then no longer needs to give you advice or counsel or give you spiritual guidance or whatever for piyehi vipayoga dukkha, piyehi sampayoga dukkha, yankichanna labati dukkha. The Buddha doesn't need to give you advice or guidance for any of those problems because the root of the problem was this is jati. If you don't know that this is jati, now you don't realize that the problem and your suffering are two different things. I'm always going on about this, even when I speak at the Swami Nuhan says, one of the first things you need to do, like we talked about Tom the other day, one of the very first things you have to do, ladies and gentlemen, if you fail at this point, you will fail from there on. This is like the first domino. This is where you have to begin. You've got to be able to distinguish your internal mental problem with the problem that is there outside. In reality, there are no problems outside. Is it a problem that you're hungry? Is that a problem? To nature, is that a problem? It's not a problem. But we want to exist. Therefore, we must think of it as a problem. If there's anyone here who feels hunger is not a problem, something's wrong with you. Hunger is a problem. Because we need to exist. Why? because we have a purpose to fulfill. Then you might ask, well, why does the Swami, why does the Rahatanvasi then continue to work on the problem of hunger? Because the Rahatanvasi needs to exist. He doesn't want to exist, but he needs to exist. What for? Exactly. Remember, once you become an Arahant, you realize the game has only just begun. I haven't even started working on the problem yet. Because there are so many other chittas suffering from jati that need to be helped. They need to be healed. So therefore, an Rahatanvasi needs to exist. Needs to continue to exist and preach the Dhamma. And be, at least be present so that people can come and make an offering to him. Even if he was mute and couldn't speak a word. Because in doing so, people create paths and avenues and opportunities for them to earn merit so that they can go on to become, achieve the same state. So ultimately, when we come to solve these problems in life, even if you take about just general objects, this, you try to apply anicca-tu. It's okay at the beginning. But the understanding that I want you to come to is that anicca is not here to help you understand this. Anicca was preached to help you understand anicca. That's what it was for. Not to help you understand this. You can begin with this. Addition. If I asked you, explain addition to me, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to ask me for a piece of paper and a pen. Aren't you? And then what are you going to do? You're going to say, Swami, I'll say, hey, wait, let me explain an addition to you. You'll put that on the board, won't you? You'll put two numbers on the board. You'll put a symbol. Is that the symbol for addition? Think and answer carefully. Is that the symbol for addition? Is that the Buddha? Sorry, I'm jumping here and there everywhere. Right. Is that the symbol for addition? Is it? Exactly, it's just a convention. What is the symbol for addition? It has no symbol. Because addition is addition. Like anicca is anicca. What is the word for anicca? Is it anicca? Are you with me? Today's a bad day, isn't it? A dakini will fix all that, don't worry. It'll help you get all this out of your mind, right? And just reset to normalcy. Okay? When you start going in that parahara, just forget all this and just continue to live normal lives and be happy. Sabbe satta bhavantu sukhitatta. I ask you the question, what is the symbol for addition? Does addition have a symbol? Does it need a symbol? No. Could I not just do that and say, add these two numbers? Where's the symbol now? There is no symbol. So what is the word for anicca? That's why people are debating. No, it's anitya. No, it's anicca. It's with a double C. No. It's the single C. Who cares how many C's it has? What if you wrote anicca like this? That's not anicca. So what? Because this is not anicca. Anicca does not have a figure. Anicca does not have a form. Anicca does not have a shape. It does not have a spelling. It is not a word. Is it? Is it a phrase then? Is it a knowledge? Is anicca a knowledge? No. Is anicca an understanding? No. It's nature. It's what is there. It's what's there. Accept it or not, it's what's there. Know it or not, it's what's there. Whether there are objects or there aren't any objects, it's what's there. Whether there is light energy, electrical energy or pure energy, it's what's there. Let's just say all of the pure energy in the universe has now been converted to all sorts of other types of energy. So there is no more pure energy. Right? So all the pure energy there is has been converted to other types of energy. It doesn't anicca exist? Because anicca is nature. Not nature that way. It is what is there. Yes. That's why they call it a Trilakkhana. Lakkhana is a characteristic, and that is what is there. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. That is what is there. Not objects. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma was not proposed to explain objects. It was just proposed because that is what is there. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Sabbatta nirodha dhammanti. Once you understand that, now you realize what anicca is. Without the word. You don't need to know that it is anicca. Maybe in another language it is not anicca. Is that okay? Is that a problem? No, once you, let's say you start learning Buddhism in Bengali. Right? In Bengali language, anicca is not anicca, it's some other word. So when we start preaching the Dhamma in that language, we don't need to use the word anicca for that. We use some other word. Because it's not the word that is important here. Whether there are words or not, whether there is language or not, whether there is knowledge or not. No, you see, I love the fact that we use the word realization when we refer to what happened to the Bodhisattva under the Bodhi tree. The Buddha, what Nibbana? Realized Nibbana. Did he invent Nibbana? No. Did he discover Nibbana? Like Christopher Columbus discovered America? No. He realized Nibbana. To realize something is a bit like this. Where are my glasses? Has anyone seen my glasses? To find Nibbana, if I had to find Nibbana, it would be something like this. Where are my glasses? Maybe saying, there. Where? There, over there. Where? Over there, just under the fan. Oh, right, there it is. That's finding. Realizing is not like that. It's unlike any other thing. Realizing is when you always have it on you. You just don't realize. It's always there. So what's there? It's always there. That's why you just have to realize it. We are not trying to find anicca. We are not trying to discover anicca. We are not trying to invent anicca. We are just trying to realize anicca, because anicca is what's there. That's why. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma is what is there. Sabbatta nirodha dhammanti is what is there. Realize that. So once you realize that, now, that is your realization. And now you are in the stream. Because now, through that realization, here's what else you realize. You realize that all is that. Anicca is all there is. So if anicca is all there is, are there pens in this world? If anicca is all there is, are there pens in this world? This is a really weird sermon, isn't it? Just imagine someone just watching this part of the sermon. Swaminas is holding a pen. He's asking the question, are there pens in this world? And they're saying, yes, 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 and you're saying, no, no, no. What's there in this world? Yankinchi, samudaya dhammang, sabbantan, nirodha dhammani. That is what's there in this world. So are there pens in this world? No. What is this then? This is anicca. This is a characteristic. Anicca has enabled this characteristic to be. What is there is anicca. Because of anicca, all these things manifest. It would be wrong of us to think that these things are there. It's a bit like, I was looking for one but I couldn't find one. This will do. Did you plan all this? I'm told the Silas Ravikas were responsible for today's decorations. Is that true? Well done. Right. See, now, what's there? What do you see? A triangle. Yeah? Let's just say you didn't like triangles. If you didn't like triangles, and you had no understanding of what I have just explained to you, you are going to have a problem with this object. Now think carefully about what I'm trying to explain to you here. If you didn't like triangles, and you had no understanding of what I've just explained to you, you are going to have a big problem with this object. Won't you? Because what you'll be thinking is, why does this object do like this to me? I don't like triangles. Why are you like that? Change. Be something else. But what does this object have to do with being a triangle? Nothing. Because is it the object itself? Is it these beads that are taking the shape of a triangle? Is it? No. Are they responsible for taking that shape? No. What is? The causes are keeping it that way. Samudaya. It's the causes. Therefore, if you don't like the triangle, are you going to have a bone to pick with the beads, let's call it a necklace? Is it this you're going to have a problem with, or should you rather speak to the hand and say, I don't like that, can you please change the shape? Let's say the hand is not willing to do what you're asking it to do. You want a different shape. Okay, you ask once nicely, please, I don't like triangles, can you change shape? No, not willing to change. You ask again, not so nicely, change please, don't like. No, not willing to change. Next time round, who are you going to come and hit? Tell me. Is it this? The object? Or the hand? Is the hand the fingers? Because you understand that the necklace has nothing to do with the shape that it's taking. You do, right? That is because you understand that it is the causes that manifest this. So, does a triangle exist here then? In this object, does a triangle exist? Does it? There you go. That is what I want you to understand as anicca. See, the causes are manifesting. Each of these causes, do you think it's just this finger that's doing it? Is it just the index finger? Is it the middle finger? Is it the ring finger? Is it the little finger? Is it just the thumb? No. Each finger in this arrangement, in fact, this is the arrangement. Now I can just put this on top of that. See? It's these causes that are contributing. Individually, they are contributing an effect. Each of these causes have a part to play in this manifestation. Of course. And also the beads. They all have a part to play, but you understand, you know, there's one way you can change this, that is by cutting this with a pair of scissors. Then you will also no longer see the triangle. But if without doing that, there's a much easier way to tackle this problem, because you understand that it is not these beads that want to take this shape, right? There's no desire for these beads to be in this shape, the string to be in this shape. If anything had a desire, it would be the fingers. So therefore you'd ask the fingers or the person to whom the fingers belong, please can you change the shape? Because there you understand that this is the causes that bring about this manifestation, and it's not the object that's taken that manifestation. You see, once you realize this, now these objects have nothing to do in your life. The objects themselves, they have no part to play in your life. Because it is not the objects that are of a certain shape, of a certain way, of a certain behavior, or a certain demeanor. It's not the objects. But until you understand that these are the causes behind it, who are the actors? It's like when you have those, puppets. Yeah, and you have the strings in the puppets, and you dance them. The puppeteers do that. Yeah, so it's the puppeteer who controls the puppet, right? So if the puppeteer controls the puppet in such a way that the puppet maybe goes and attacks a character that you like in this drama, your problem cannot be with the puppet, because it's the puppeteer who controls the puppet. In other words, it is the causes Because now you understand anicca, causes here manifest an effect. So therefore your dealings now become are solely with the causes, no longer with the effect. But then, so now you see, how does this help you to solve that problem with Tom then? Because these are the practical problems in life. This is the theory. But the application of your theory is where your problems are resolved in life. So you're back in the tube, back on the train, back in the bus. Tom's taken your seat. Do you look at Tom or do you look at causes? You've got to look at causes. Remember what I said. You've got to be able to split the outside world problem. As I talked about hunger earlier. Hunger is a problem that you need to fix because Arahatan Vahanse, even if you're an Arahatan Vahanse, you still have to exist for the betterment of all sentient beings. But if suffering is what's happening in you right now, that has nothing to do with Tom. Nothing whatsoever. But when you don't see, when you're unable to separate the causes from the effect, if you're unable to separate the causes from the effect, now you see the effect as an entity. And then from there on, your dealings are going to be with the effect. Think about as many of the examples as you can about, you know, what happens after jati. Take death, for instance. Yeah? No, we none of us like death. We don't like death. When we think about death, whose death are you thinking of? Exactly. My death, her death, his death, my mother's death, my father's death. Because when you talk about individuals' deaths, now you stop seeing the causes. You start looking at the effect. You start seeing the results, and those effects, you entitify. And once you start seeing the entities, there is nothing that you can do other than suffer with from the effects. See, death has been a problem for people for God knows how long, right? What solutions have they found to that? People are nowadays, thanks to technology, they're freezing dead bodies in the hope that one day they'll be able to bring them back to life. Do you think they've found a problem to death? The suffering of death, have they found a problem to that? No. So technology is never going to help solve that problem. That is because they think about entities and what happens to the entities. If as long as you keep fighting and your battle is with the entities, you're never going to win this war. Because you've got to be able to see past the entities, see past the manifestations out there and start to see the causes behind it. Yankinchi samudaya dhamma. How samudaya is what is there, not the effect that's on the outside. Let's not try to describe this pen, ladies and gentlemen. Let's try to describe the nature that has made this pen possible. The Buddha's purpose was that. Your understanding of the Dhamma is your understanding of the nature. The nature, I can't say of nature. But if you want, we can go with that. This nature is this. The nature is characteristic. There are three of this. Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta. Here, you have an infinite possibilities. Our effort is not to understand this through this. It's to understand this. Once you've understood this, you've understood it all, because that is what is there. Anicca is what is there. Dukkha is what is there. Anatta is what is there. So we're focusing on anicca, because once you get the concept of anicca, you get the concept of dukkha, you get the concept of anatta. And for that you don't need a word. Just like addition does not need a symbol. But whenever someone asks you what is addition, there's only one way you can show that. That's why when someone asks you what is anicca, Guru Handra will have to pick up the pen and start talking about it. Until you get to the concept. Once you get to the concept of it, you no longer need a pen. Once you understand the concept of addition, do you now need numbers to understand it? You don't need the concept of addition. Just think about the concept of addition for a second. Does it come with specific numbers? Is it one and one? When you think of addition, do numbers come into your head all of a sudden? No, it's a concept of how two things can be added together, right? It has nothing to do with numbers. But numbers are one way in which we explain, describe, demonstrate what addition is. But addition has nothing to do with numbers. Subtraction has nothing to do with numbers. So what is the symbol for it? And that's just a convention. So in the same way, anicca is just a convention. And we use these objects around us. We use whatever furniture, other materials. We can use any amount of things to demonstrate the nature of anicca. In fact, we use nature to demonstrate the nature. This is the nature. Anicca dukkha anatta are the nature. The nature, I can't say it is the nature of nature. What I'm saying is, it's the other way around, if you like. If you want to understand nature, you can refer to the nature. But the nature was not there, was not proclaimed, was not taught, was not expounded by the Buddha to necessarily understand nature. It's just the nature. Anicca and dukkha and anatta. That's it. Those are the characteristics. Whether you're understanding it or not, it is the nature. If you understand it, now you can use them to help realize, because when we come into this world out of ignorance, this is all we come in with. So these are the problems you're grappling with. These are the problems you're striving to resolve. So of course, as soon as you hear these words, what are you going to apply them to? Of course, you're going to apply them to this. There's no doubt about that. Where else would you do? Because these are the problems you walk into the room with. But in your application, and as you further your knowledge, your understanding, you realize, wait a second, these are just characteristics. I don't necessarily need to apply them to these things. It's just the characteristics. In fact, once you've understood these characteristics, none of these things any longer exist. Huh? If the mind has entirely and fully understood, comprehended the nature of anicca, dukkha and anatta, such a mind no longer manifests as a mind even. That is what happens to an arahatun mahansa. At the point of their passing away, what do they become? Exactly. So they don't become something, because there's no they to become something. A Rahatan Mahasaya doesn't become something or someone, just like you don't become something or someone. Can you think of yourself as just energy? First of all, just think of yourself as energy, you know, just like electricity. You waste electricity, don't you? Sometimes you leave the fan on, leave the lights on, leave the tap running. And then you feel, oh, we waste electricity. Can you think of yourself just like you think of electricity? Try. It's difficult. Because when you do, you think electricity is just electricity. There's no one there, it's just electricity. But I, of course, am an individual. You can waste electricity, but you can't waste me, because I'm an individual, I'm a person. Did you know that it was just your mind, which is also an energy, which is defiled with ignorance, that makes you feel that way? Your mind thinks that this energy is actually an individual. It personifies this aggregation of energy. It's like if light began to think that I'm light, if heat started to think that I'm heat, if motion started to think that I am motion, if potential energy started to feel that they were an entity, this self-based thinking, you won't be able to waste them. You won't be able to use electricity like you do today. Because then they have preferences, they have choices, they have needs, they have wants, they have a way they want to be, just like individuals they do. But a Rahatan Mahansa doesn't have any preferences. They don't have any wants. That's why anything goes for a Rahatan Mahansa. You can't please them by praising them. You can't hurt them by insulting them. Why is that? Can you please energy by thanking it? You know the electricity that lights up your lights at home, your bulbs? The electricity that turns the fan? Shall we try it? Switch on the fan. Look at the fan and say, thank you very much, electricity. Do you think the fan's going to turn faster? Just out of sheer gratitude for you having appreciated it. Do you think the fan's going to turn faster? And do more of what it comes to do. It doesn't do that. Can you just make the light go brighter by thanking it? Why not? Or how about, do you think the light's going to go off if you started insulting it? Why not? Why not? For the simple reason that it doesn't identify with itself as a self. So why do you then? If you are also energy, why is it that you like people who appreciate you, but you don't like people who insult you? Why? If you are also energy, just like the light, just like heat, just like sound, just like kinetic energy, just like motion, just like potential energy, if you are also energy, why do you feel insulted when someone says, you are bad, you smell, you're ugly? Huh? Why do you feel insulted? And if someone says, oh, you're very smart looking today, you're very good looking, I like you, you smell nice, you're very handsome, you're very pretty today, why do you feel like you have this, some real connection with them, and you want to please them, and then after that, you know, you make nice things for them, you cook nice foods for them, and you smile at them, and you say thank you, and you have this special sense of gratitude towards them. Why that? Exactly. Because of this sense of self. In other words, you suffered. You suffered. So whenever you feel this way, you got to come to your senses. I've gone beyond who I am. In the Pali, there's a nice term for it. It's called tuccha. When you go beyond what you are supposed to be, I'm not saying who you are supposed to be. When you go beyond what you're supposed to be, when you overstep the mark, it's called tuccha. That's why Potila, Andhra, was referred to as tuccha by the Buddha. It was not an insult per se. It was showing him what had gone wrong with him. You have gone beyond. It was a karmasthana. That itself. Do you think the Buddha's intention is to hurt people? Here's a monk who has ordained in the Buddha sasana, and he's also a monk who'd been ordained in several Buddha sasanas. And doesn't the Buddha know that this man is going to become an arahant in this birth? So, what do you think the Buddha's aspiration is now? To help him get that done, right? So the Buddha knows, he sees into the future, he sees that this monk is going to now go and meet a samanera, who's going to give him advice, and who's going to give him guidance, and then through that practice he's going to attain greatness. So the Buddha is now laying down the first stone by saying, tuccha, tuccha. What he's saying is, you overstep the mark. You think of yourself highly. You seek praise. That's why you have come up to me and you're asking me and for praise. You're looking for me to glorify you for all the things you've done in the previous Buddha sasanas and so on. Because remember what Potila Andhra did, right? Walked up to the Buddha and said, Venerable Sir, you know, I am not just in this birth, but in the previous births as well. I have been a monk in previous dispensations and I've been spreading the Dhamma. I've been of great service to the Sambuddha Sasana, just as I have done in this sasana as well. So I would like for your appreciation. And the Buddha did appreciate him. The Buddha did. Tuccha. You overstep the mark. You think that it is you who deserves credit. Yeah, there's a really nice lesson to take away from that. As I speak to this audience, see if you can get that in your minds. You see, you've come to a point in your lives, ladies and gentlemen, where your lives are a lot more virtuous and your lives are holier than they used to be. You do a lot more good than you do bad. In fact, maybe bad is now almost negligible in your lives. You do a lot of good. And you do a lot of good that affects other people as well. As a result of that, you will get a lot of praise from others. A lot of people will thank you. They'll share with you how grateful they are to you and so on. In these moments, don't become tuchas. In these moments, strive to recognize that all that's going on here is a process of vipaka. If you start taking credit for all that, you will have failed. Remember, goodness is the greatest obstacle to greatness. You are all very good now, aren't you? Aren't you? You're all very good now. But don't stop at goodness. Because there are good people, there are bad people, there are no great people. There is greatness. Greatness is there. Good people are there, bad people are there. Greatness is there. No great people. I want you all to aspire to greatness. So you're all good people now. Stop thinking that it is you who's good. Today you'll be bringing flowers, offering flowers at the Buddha statue. You'll be walking along the Parihara, right? You'll be offering the alms. You'll be washing the alms bowls. You'll be offering pitikara and so on. And in these instances, you will sense that it is you who's doing this good deed. If you can, I urge you, try and think beyond that. Ask yourself, when you're offering that atapirikara, who is it that's offering this atapirikara? Why is it that I have this feeling in my mind that it is I who's making this offering? That is the obstacle to your greatness. Start thinking in terms of vipaka. Start seeing just yankinchi samudedam, sabbanta nirodha dhammanti. All there is samudaya and nirodha. It is not I who has samudaya, who has come into being, and it is I who is not going to, who is going to perish. It's not my arising and passing away you are trying to understand. It's just the nature of samudaya and nirodha. That's all. There is a nature. Nature of what? No, it's just nature. It is the nature, if you like, of nature. But I have to say, it would be slightly wrong of me to say that it is the nature of nature. It is not the nature of nature. It is just nature. It is just the nature. So what there is that. Anicca is what is there. Now, I appreciate that what I have tried to explain to you today is a little bit deep. It's a bit profound, very somewhat subtle, but I think I'm speaking to the right audience. You have your teachers, of course. You can go and talk these things over with, and you have the afternoon sessions as well. I don't know, do you have them today? Not today. So you'll have them in the following weeks. But try and understand what we have discussed today, and try and make sense of it. I know it's one thing to say, but it's another to do, right? I'm asking you to try. Of course we are trying, so what do you think we are doing? I know you're trying. But if you get this, folks, if you can really grasp this concept that I've been trying to explain to you, all your problems will be solved. You will go beyond the thinking of there are entities, there's me, there are these objects, whose anicca I am trying to see. You go from that, you step over that, you transcend that, and you realize that anicca is what is there. That is not to say that these things are not there. What I'm trying to say is, it is not that these things that are there, because of the nature of anicca, manifestations are there, but manifestations are once again anicca dressed up in another word, that's all. Even when you ask me what is here, I'm not going to say nothing is here. If you ask me, is there a pen here? I'll say, yes, a pen is here. But then if you keep asking me, okay, so a pen is here, but what is there? If you ask me that question, I'll say, yankinchi samudaya dhamma. Because what is there is anicca. It's just the nature that is there. The reason you call this a pen, just think about that, finally. Just think about why you call this a pen. You don't call this a pen because it's a pen. You call this a pen because you can write with it. The day you can no longer write with it, you might call this a doorstop. Or you might call it a paperweight. Yeah? Because it no longer has the characteristic of writing. Once the nib runs out, you won't call it a pen. You might call it a dried out pen. It's no longer a pen. There are so many objects that you find at home. You used to, you know, do various things. Now this is a piece of paper. When you bought it from the store, it was a piece of paper. And if it had some packing, he would have said, to be able to draw, to write things on, right? These are sheets of paper. That's what people use them for. But you have used it for something very different. Something completely different. This is probably not what it was invented for. The manufacturers maybe didn't invent this for that. But do you think the manufacturers have a right to determine what a paper is invented for? No. Because it is just what is there. That's all. Yankiji samudaya dhamma. I'll leave you with that. Food for thought. Of course, sir. The truth is all of this, right? Yes. Truth is all of this. All of this is the truth. Anicca is the truth. What about dukkha? Truth. Anatta. Truth. Characteristics. Truth.
Nature.
Truth. All of it is truth. Truth is the truth. So everything that is true is the truth. Anything that is not true is not the truth. That's all. Just as a reminder, we don't have, for the next two Saturdays, we won't be having the sermon here. Next Saturday we have the ordination ceremony, and the Saturday after we have the pagoda opening ceremony. So the Saturday morning sermon will not be there. The Sunday sessions will carry on, so if you wish to take your weekly digest of the Dhamma, and if you wish to listen to it in English, then the Sunday sermons will still happen. Let us take a moment then to transfer all the merits that we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, inviting the Swami Nohase to deliver the preaching, observing precepts, and creating a conducive environment for all to come along and practice the Dhamma. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, and with immense gratitude let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer these merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that amongst them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swami Nohanse, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. Let us also transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery who, for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as continue to extend their know-how and their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, and to everyone and anyone who's always gone the extra mile, the extra step on our behalf. Out of gratitude towards all of them, let us take a moment to transfer all the merits that we have acquired to all. May they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our loved ones who have passed away in our name, to our forefathers, our ancestors, as well as to members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, and men and women who have lost their lives in the wars, as well as those who have lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods and the pandemics. Reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us. It is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life that we do, as well as practice the path in peace and harmony. Out of gratitude towards all of them, let us transfer all the merits that we have acquired throughout our journey in samsara to all of them. May they rejoice in these merits And if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of these merits they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I and everyone who's helped make this program a success become a Rahatan Muhanse or an Arahatarani Muhanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will transfer the blessings to you.
Raga ginnen nidetnva Dvesha ginnen nidetnva Moha ginnen nidetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen Sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva
Tunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna bilen Silu loka silu sattayoma Nibbana paramasukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.